What's up, y'all? It's Jamon Bolton here, another episode of the Jamon Bolton Show. You know, today's show, I got some stuff to talk about, man. There's a lot of stuff going on, actually, man. It's a lot of things going on. Things have just been happening, and I want to dive right into it. So, you know, we're going to start with the NBA. There's been a few things going on, and we'll get to everything that we need to get to with the NBA. But, of course, this whole Magic Johnson resignation, they caught everybody off guard. I, for one, I didn't expect it. I figured, like many, right, you hear from the outside looking in, you say, hey, Magic's back with the Lakers, and you're like, holy crap, Magic's back with the Lakers. Like, the Lakers are about to do something special. That's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear that. Like, Magic's back with the Lakers. He's got them going again. He's got the magic touch, literally. It seems like everything he touches kind of just sparkles a little bit. You know, it turns to gold. He's a winner. He's won on every level as far as basketball goes. And as far as his business endeavors, we all know what he's done. His track record there is phenomenal. And as a basketball executive, we said, hey, listen, he puts forth the effort and everything, and I think he's still going to be amazing no matter what you do and what you say or no matter how you wrap it up. I had the utmost confidence in him. But, you know, some of these moves that were made initially, you start to say, I don't know. You know what I mean? You're like, some of these moves, like, what? Why'd you do that? Why would you do that? And, it was just weird. You know, some of it was weird how things were being handled. You know, obviously nobody really knew. Jeannie didn't know anything. She found out when the rest of the world found out, apparently. I remember sitting there. I was sitting there getting something to drink from the store, and I got a message on my phone like, yo, you quit. I'm like, what? Like, that was just crazy. So you kind of running to confirm everything, and you're wondering what's what. And yeah, it was true. Magic was stepping down. He was done. It's like, come on, quitting before everything's, you know, just quitting so fast. It was just weird. I thought it would be done a little bit different. And considering the relationship he has with the Buss family, it was another thing that was kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I was shocked by it. But of course, everybody played their part, did everything what they have to do as far as being politically correct with their responses. You know, Jeannie tweeted something out, showed a lot of love and support. But we know deep down inside, it's one of those things where it's like, dog, like, come on, man. You got to do a little bit better than that for us. You got to hook us up a little bit more, man. Like, why? Like, why not? You know, come on. What's going on? You know, it's just different. It felt a little odd. I thought I wasn't expecting it. But, you know, he has a lot going on. Personally, I think as far as everything goes, he's Magic Johnson. He's extremely successful. He doesn't need the job. And it's one of those jobs where you really have to really dive in deep, you know? You got to be in these gyms. You got to scout. The way the game is now, you got to go to Europe. The way the game's going in a couple years, you're going to have to go back to high school gyms. I don't really know if he was really up for that, you know? And then, of course, it puts the restrictions on him. Like Magic Johnson noted, and he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said when Russell Westbrook, you know, nets his third consecutive season of triple-doubles, I can't congratulate him. When Ben Simmons wants to work out, I can't work out with him. Because, of course, you know, with the NBA, that's considered tampering. Magic's a guy that everybody loves. Magic's a guy that no matter how old you are, people are always going to want to be around him. Because it's Magic Johnson. He's one of those guys that historically you just want to talk, you want to pick his brain, you want to learn. How did he see what he saw? How did you do this? How did you make this? Hell, me being a fan, I know when I see him, I want to ask him a few questions on some of those passes he made. The pass to Byron Scott of Phoenix when he's coming down the middle and he goes behind the back and looks left, throws right, and Byron Scott catches the dunk. That's neither here nor there, but that's just me talking about what I want to do. But I'm surprised, like I'm going to say this, right? He didn't leave the Lakers in a bad situation financially where they're so strapped and they don't really have anything. Like, you know, they're in a good position financially. They can sign two max guys. Will they get two? That's the question. If so, what two would it be? They're going to have a lottery pick as well. And things could, you know, everybody's saying Zion's going to the Knicks or whatever. I mean, hell, the ping pong balls could bounce and the Lakers get one of the top. The Lakers could get the top pick. I mean, it's happened before. It's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you can go back to Orlando. They were 41-41. They probably should have gotten the 12th pick in it. The 12th pick that year. They ended up getting the first pick back to back. And, you know, in 93, you know what they got. They got Penny Hardaway. So, they ended up drafting Chris Webber and traded for Penny Hardaway. But that's neither here nor there. But things can happen. The timing is just really weird. But that's how it is sometimes, I guess, you know. But I think they're about to turn it around. Personally, I think things are going to go the right way. They're going to get the right pieces around LeBron. We're hearing all these rumors and everything that's going on, but we really don't know how accurate anything is right now. You got these insiders and people who say this, people who say that. So we never really know what's going on and what's going to happen. So I just find it to be weird, you know, hearing all the stuff. And then today, they started breaking stories about he felt betrayed by people in the Lakers organization. It wasn't Jeannie Buss, because obviously that's a relationship I don't think that'll ever be shattered or, you know, have any harm done to it. But apparently GM Rob Pelinka was showing up the practice facilities and saying like, oh, it's Magic, kind of in response to him not being a present guy. And I mentioned earlier, it's a job that requires you to, you know, you got to be on the road a lot. You got to do a lot of dirty work. Sometimes it's not going to be a 40-hour work week. It's going to be an 80-hour work week, especially now when you're trying to build up the clientele. You know, you know, you got to be out there. You got to grind. It's a lot. So I don't know, man. It's just totally different. I don't know. It's just weird, man. The way everything is and just how everything is turning out. But I don't know. I wasn't expecting this at all, man. It really throws a black cloud over the franchise, makes things look a little different. You know, you're hearing LeBron supportive of the organization still. It's still going to be, it's just odd, man. You know, he's just odd. I think personally, he should have never really taken a position. You know, be a consultant, that way you're not confined. You know, because yesterday at his press conference, he was like, look, man, I'm back to being Magic. And they were talking about it today on a lot of the radio shows and stuff. You know, being Magic, you know, it requires him to, you know, it requires him to he has to, he's the human LinkedIn, as Colin Coward said. Everybody loves him. He loves everybody. He's almost insulted if you don't reach out to him and reach out to him for help. That's just kind of what it is. And that's who he is. And he couldn't do that. He felt confined. He said now he's back to being happier. And for what it's worth, I mean, look, I thought he was happy anyway, right? But I guess this proves it. And he gets to keep doing what he wants to do. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going forward. I heard rumors, you know, that they're going to go after some people. Personally, I'm not going to lie. If I know what I know about how brilliant this guy is, I'd go after David Griffin. You know, David Griffin's the ex-Cavaliers GM. He was there with LeBron. And LeBron liked him a lot and loved him, actually, because when Griffin didn't get his contract renewed by the Cavs organization, LeBron tweeted out, hey, good luck with everything. Griff's my guy. If you kind of want to read between the lines, he was a little pissed at that. So I say go after him. He's going to make the right decisions. He's going to do everything the right way. Obviously, he can execute. You know, you have Rob Pelinka, who was a great agent, and he's like has the NBA salary cap. Like, he knows it back and forth. And I think with those two together, they can be really smart and really strategic. They can build a plan. I don't think a plan was in place. I don't think Magic had that there. I think this is me personally. This is my personal thought. I didn't hear anybody else say that. Maybe he figured the lore of him, you know, him being Magic. I'm going to get this done. I'm going to show up. We're going to talk. Now, obviously, if LeBron doesn't get hurt, he doesn't hurt his groin, they're in the playoffs right now. They, you know, they're locked in. They're in one of the top four seeds. We're talking about, hey, they got to face Golden State in the second round. They might have been the fourth seed. They got to face Golden State in the second round. What they going to do? Blah, blah, blah. They advance. A lot of things are going to, you know, we're thinking or whatever the case may be. But he goes down and everything happens. The Anthony Davis fiasco. I mean, it was a weird season for them. It was just a weird season. It was crazy. Like, all that happened. They ended up winning two more games. I just think his injury really hurt a lot. And I think the Anthony Davis thing was crazy. Everybody played dumb, like they didn't know what was going on, but it just wasn't a good thing. And it backfired on everybody's face, right? Everybody kind of like got the gas face because of it. They could have done a better job handling that situation. That situation was handled piss poor. You just can't do that. You know, you got young guys, they're balling, all of a sudden they're gonna be traded. They think they're gonna be traded, then they don't get traded, they gotta come back. It's weird. And then when you look at the draft as well, I like Lonzo Ball, just hasn't really been healthy. He's missed a ton of games the last 2 years. And of course, you have to deal with the extra stuff off the court with his dad. You should have probably taken Jason Tatum. If you take Jason Tatum, your franchise is in a totally different spot. You know, some of the moves he's made hasn't been great. You got rid of Julius Randle, who's balling. You got Brooke Lopez is balling. D'Angelo Russell became an all-star, is about to get a huge deal. And it's like, you traded all these people away. Why? You got to be patient sometimes. Got to trust the process. You got to see it out. I just don't think he had that in him. You know, sometimes great players don't make great executives because it's not what you think it is. You put that working on the court a couple hours, you know, you can dictate the outcome of games. As an executive, you kind of got to try to put the pieces together and hope it works. You know, people threw together a roster this year thinking that you put the certain pieces around LeBron, it's going to work. So they didn't plan for him getting hurt. And I don't think anybody does, but you never know what's going to happen. I mean, he's not Superman, and we showed this year, right? Like, he got hurt. He ended up, you know, unfortunately, he ended up hurt, and things happen and things took a turn for the worse or whatever for him injury-wise, because he's never been hurt like that. But it's a little odd, a little different. I don't know what the heck's going on, but the league basketball's better when the Lakers are good. And so it's such an intriguing position, and I think it's such an intriguing situation right now. So I won't count them out just due to the fact of what I said a little earlier. They've got two they got enough for two max people, and they can go at, like I said, they'll get a lottery pick, and they can get somebody. Somebody's got to come here. I don't think everybody's turned off by the situation. I still think, no matter what people say, the Clippers look better. Yeah, maybe because they got an owner with such deep pockets, and he's willing to pay top dollar for everything, and he's got the money. He's not willing to, you know, he's not afraid to spend or whatever. But I still find it interesting. I still don't see why people wouldn't take a meeting. I could see possibly something that's been kept quiet from everybody. I could see maybe Kyrie, you know, taking some meetings with them. Possibly. I mean, Kevin Durant, possibly. I don't see Kawhi Leonard wanting to come back home and be a Clipper. I mean, let's call a spade. You don't grow up saying, hey, I want to be a Clipper. You grow up thinking about going with the purple and gold. If you're a kid in L.A., at least. I mean, nobody grows up and wants to be a Clipper, right? I mean, things may be different now. I'm talking about for somebody from the outside. I don't know what's going on. You know, maybe from the inside looking in, with NBA being an NBA player, you know, like, yo, it's turning around for the better over there. You know, Doc Rivers got the best out of them. They're balling. They made the playoffs. They're good, et cetera, et cetera. We shall see, right? We'll see. I mean, I really know. I couldn't tell you, but I know growing up, if I'm a Californian kid, I'm going to the Lakers. I'm coming back home. I'm purple and gold. You know, if Paul George takes that, you know, he signs last year, him and LeBron, you know, he probably carries the load. LeBron, 17 games that he misses. Lakers probably lose 3 or 4. They get back to being who they are, but he needs another sidekick. He's not 25 anymore. You know, Father Time is catching up, and he needs that help. But I think once he gets that help, it's going to be all right, man. It's just a crazy thing. Didn't mean to go off on a tangent about everything, but the situation's really been odd, I think. Overall, just been extremely odd, and they need to get it fixed, and I think they will. So, yeah, man, Magic Johnson. I'm shocked. I'm shocked. But when you look at what I said, you know, that job requires a lot. It's Magic Johnson. Does he really need the money? No, he don't need anything. So I got 80 hours for what? That's for everybody up and coming doing what they got to do, right? So, I mean, that's what it is, man. So let me slide over, man, and talk about the two legends that are done. You know, last night, well, not last night, the other night, Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade played their last home games. Amazing to see, just something incredible. You know, Dirk Nowitzki, it's weird, like, as I get older, I start to realize, like, hold on, I remember when they first came into the league. I remember when Dirk Nowitzki first came in, and I remember him, you know, being a guy, and he wasn't good his first year. And I remember looking at it and being like, God, why'd they pass on Track the Trailer? God bless his soul. Because I don't mean any, you know, disrespect. Like, why would they trade Track the Trailer? Track the Trailer is legit. He's good, man. You know, you can't pick a foreign player. You know, back then, scouting, you know, we were scouting foreign players, and not us, me personally, but everybody in the NBA was scouting foreign players. And you're just like, yo, like, come on, man. Like, who's this kid? Fast, you know, rewind back a couple months. He demolishes the USA, in the Hoop Summer. He demolishes us in the first Hoop Summer. And everybody's like, yo, who is this kid? Now, mind you, we got Rashard Lewis. We got Al Harrington. We got a crazy crew. Like, yo, why? These dudes in high school were beasts. Like, they were crazy. And you look and you're like, yo, bro, like, why? Like, what happened? You know what I'm saying? So, he kills everybody. He goes off on people, and, you know, basically he makes a name for himself. He comes in his first year, averages about 8. That was the lockout year, actually. So when it's the lockout, it's kind of like, all right, first year. I still think they should have took Track the Trailer, blah, blah, blah. The next year he comes on, he starts coming to life. And every year it just got better and better and better and better. And he became the Dirk Nowitzki that we know and love today. Such a good guy. I've seen his whole career come through it, you know, develop in front of my eyes, and I got a chance to watch as many Dallas Maverick games as I could, you know, watching him the highs and the lows, and seeing him go through what he went through as far as being on the court. And the fact of the matter remains that he pulled his franchise out of the dumps, because as a kid they were terrible, man. They were bad, man. So I love this game, and I've always loved this game, and they're kind of watching him just get better and better every year, you know, winning an MVP, and, you know, God, he was so good, man. He was really, really good. That EP year was amazing. And unfortunately, they got upset, and, you know, things happened or whatever. But, You know, he was one of them 50, you know, them 50, 90, 40, them 50, 90, 40 guys, or 90, 50, 40 guys, however you want to call it. He's spectacular. Like, it's hard to describe him. You know, one of the greats to ever play this game. One of the greats. Definitely got to love the dude. Pulled that franchise out the dumps. You know, retired as, you know, what, 6th all-time leading scorer in NBA history. It's incredible to watch. And then, you know, seeing what he did, you know, 14-time All-Star, NBA champion, NBA Finals MVP in 2011, MVP in 2007, 21 seasons with one team, 12-time All-NBA, first ballot Hall of Fame. He's going to moonwalk into the Hall of Fame. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even a thought. I would really love to see the ballot of the person that doesn't select, who tries not to select him, or find a reason to say, hey, he doesn't deserve to be in there first ballot. Like, I would really love to hear that and see that, because that's just a little crazy. But I mean, that's neither, you know, that's whatever. That's just my thought process and what I think. Then of course we got to go over to the other legend, Dwayne Wade. You know, career's over, great career. You know, here's a guy that could probably still play 2 more years. I think he probably played 2 more years. I think, as a, you know, guy that put forth all that effort, you know, career 22 point per game scorer. I mean, he's amazing. You know, he's hurt a lot at certain times in his career, like hurt more times than you would want him to be hurt. But I mean, it was just incredible just to watch him and to see what he did, to see how he did it. I mean, just another guy, 3-time champion. You know, he did a lot. He did a lot for the game. I think he really did a lot. And it's just, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, people don't really fully appreciate. And then when he's gone, it's like, okay, you know, you look at his credentials and you look at everything that he's brought to the table. I mean, 13 seasons, 8-time All-NBA. You know, he played both ends of the court. One of the greatest shot-blocking guards in the history. 3-time All-Defense, 3 rings, as I mentioned before. 23,110 points. You know, definitely first ballot Hall of Famer. He's obviously a Finals MVP. He's, he's an Olympian. I mean, it's Dwayne Wade. He's great. I mean, the thing about it, everybody loves an underdog story. Everybody loves a Rocky story. Everybody loves the fact that, you know, here he is. He's a guy that was recruited by 3 colleges, sits out his first year because he didn't get the test scores at Marquette, gets in, balls out second year. He goes and leads him to the Final Four, declares for the draft. 03, he's kind of like an afterthought, right? You got LeBron, you got Carmelo, Chris Bosh, and then you got the Dwayne Wade kid, right? I personally, you know, I figured he'd be a good player, 18, 19 point per game scorer for his career. And even when you look at those numbers, sometimes it doesn't really equate to what it is. You know, like Dirk averaged 20 for his career, exactly. Dirk was a superstar, though. So it's different levels of an 18, 19 point per game scorer. Some guys just aren't superstars. They can score, they're good, but they're not superstars. And, you know, Dwayne Wade's a superstar. Amazing. You know, definitely, it was a great way he went out tonight. His last home game, he balled out. He had 30. Dirk had 30 as well. His last NBA game tonight, he had what? He had a triple-double tonight. He had his boys at Brooklyn. He's just amazing. Just amazing to see, man. It's really great to see these players and you watch them grow. You know, I remember D-Wade's first playoff appearance when he went at Baron Davis. You don't go at Baron Davis like that. Not at that time. I mean, he went at Baron Davis. No fear, no nothing. Nothing but respect. You got to love the dude. It was just amazing to see. So that was something that I really, you know, you start to look at him and respect him. Then the next year, he gets Shaq and it's like, uh-oh. It's going to be crazy. And then you see that game just take off. And it just took off. Excuse me. And it just took off a lot. And his scoring average went up 8 points that second year. The next year, it went up 3 more. And they were NBA champions. I mean, he was 24 years old, an NBA champion, and did what he had to do. And that's when the birth of, you know, Flash. No, Shaq called him Flash that second year. But that was it. He started to take off and take off into his own. And then he became one of the great young stars. And again, like I said, he held his own. Was one of the best, was one of those guys that everybody, you know, they sat there and they loved, and he was a guy that you could appreciate. And, you know, definitely, he's going to definitely be missed. I think they're both going to be missed. And it's a situation where you got to go. Time doesn't wait for any man. So they got to go do what they got to do. They'll be missed, you know, but he's another one that I'm moonwalking to the Hall of Fame. So while I'm talking about Dwayne Wade, I had to give him his props on his great career. I'm a couple days late to the party, so bear with me, okay? So I didn't get a chance to really throw the pod, you know, put a pod up about it. The whole Dwayne Wade and Paul Pierce argument, right? Now, I've talked about this off the record to people. I talk to people now. And, you know, people who love basketball love a good debate, right? People love a good debate. People, they want to hear what you got to say. And I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it as much as I possibly can. I want to constantly talk about it. I want to constantly go back and forth with people whenever I can. So right now, unfortunately, I'm just doing the talking. And then I'm going to say what I want to say. If anybody feels free to, you know, wants to chime in, feel free. You know, I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, at Jay Bolton Show. DM me, whatever. Tell me whatever you think. I'll throw up an audio clip of this. Just please let me know. Paul Pierce was asked if he was better than Dwayne Wade. Paul Pierce said, no. I mean, yeah, I am. Common sense, people. He's supposed to say, I'm better than him. What guy doesn't think he's better than anybody? I mean, it's just competitive. You're in the NBA, you know. Like, there's one guy where, like, the exception always applied, right? Everybody kind of knew Mike was the best in the NBA. Because if you said you were the best at that time, he's going to light you up and torture you whenever he played you, right? So some people were kind of walking a fine line. They had that one argument in 92 when it was like, who's the best shooting guard? And Clyde Drexler was like, well, I think I'm the best shooting guard in the NBA. The wrong thing to do. Don't do that. And you see what happened. When he went out there, that famous shrug, you know, in the finals in game one, when he hit six threes in the first half and they had 35 in the first half, NBA finals record. You know why? He got started. You don't talk about him like that because he's going to go off on you. Clyde Drexler knows what's up. Clyde Drexler knew what's up. But Clyde Drexler was speaking out of turn, speaking out of pocket, actually. So he had to say what he had to say. You know, but that's the competitor in him. You can't knock him. When Clyde Drexler made that argument, he was averaging 26, 27 a game himself, right? The two best teams in the league were facing each other, and, you know, it's Jordan. Paul Pierce said what he had to say. Paul Pierce has 10 All-Star appearances, four-time All-NBA. He's got a championship ring. He's got over 26,000 points. People act like he was disrespectful for saying that. You know, people act really disrespectful. There's certain players that if they did say that, I'd be like, yo, chill, you bugging. Like, somebody came to me yesterday, and I was talking to him at the gym, and he told me Robert Horry had a better career than Charles Barkley because Robert Horry has more rings. Now, I always say this, right? Paul Pierce has more points. And I'll get back to that comment I just made. Paul Pierce has more points, but that doesn't really tell you the story. Dwayne Wade played on both sides of the court hard. So a lot of his injuries probably were given to, you know, he probably aggravated a lot of them himself. Dwayne Wade, you know, balled out. Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, those are guys that epitomize the fact of a kid sitting in his bedroom saying, yo, if I make it, I'm going to play hard as I can every game, all the time. And he did. Dunking, you know, dunking, falling on the floor, diving for balls, you know, different things like that. That's what happens when you lay it all out in the court. You know, now I know basketball enough to sit there and say, yo, they were both killers in their time. They were both killers. They were both killers. I mean, scary on the court, scary, right? But one thing I sit there and I say, yo, it's really hard to make an argument, make an assessment or whatever the case may be, as far as they both go and how I'm going to sit there and I'm gonna cipher through this argument. But listen, I'm going to tell you what. You look at the list of all-time greats for every position. You look at the small forward. You look at the shooting guard list, right? Let's take a look at the shooting guard list. We can start right there. A couple years ago, ESPN, they ran at the top shooting guards, top, you know, position list or whatever the case may be. And you look at certain things. I look at the top shooting guard list. Jordan's always going to be one, right? Then you got Kobe. Then after you got Kobe, you know, it depends on who you want. Some people may put Jerry West. Some people may put Allen Iverson. But Dwayne Wade is arguably the third best shooting guard ever. You know, you may have an old school guy that is going to sit there and tell you, yo, Jerry West is a bad boy. Anyway, he's the logo. The only guy to ever be named Finals MVP for a losing team. Like, you know, he averaged 27, 6, and 2 steals a game for his career and shot almost 48% from the field. I mean, insane. Averaged 40 a game in the playoffs in 1965. Like, it's crazy, right? So he's done some amazing things. Dwayne Wade is, again, you know, what, 3 or 4 on the shooting guard list? Some may have him at 5, depending on, you know, what you want, what you're trying to do. It's dependent. Some people may have him there. You know what I mean? I can't get mad at them for that. You know, they're going to say what they got to say. They're going to feel what they want to feel. But that's just how it is. As far as everything else goes, I think we look at the small forward list. When you look at that list, that's something that makes you go, okay, this is a little interesting. This is something that makes you go, Paul Pierce is a little further down on that small forward list. Dwayne Wade's a top 3 small shooting guard. Then you look at Paul Pierce, arguably the 12th best small forward ever. That's not saying he wasn't great. That's just saying there's a lot of guys that were great in front of him. Now, I get his argument. He didn't really have a lot of help during his career. And he could have been another one of those guys that scored 30,000 points and have him a championship. Right? He could have been Karl Malone. He could have been that. You know, but I really hate the ring argument for a lot of things, right? Some people think a ring diminishes what you were. You're not going to sit here and tell me Patrick Ewing wasn't a great center because he didn't have a ring. Patrick Ewing didn't have help. You know what I'm saying? Patrick Ewing didn't really have help. 94, we got a chance to finally get over the hump. I mean, game six in the 94 finals. Hakeem Olajuwon got his hand on the hot, on John Starks' heart. If Hakeem Olajuwon doesn't go and go and take the shot, you know, try to block Starks' shot, we're not sitting here talking about that. We say Patrick Ewing has a ring. So it's like a ring does, you know, rings and accolades don't really sit there and take away from what you really are. You know, I don't think one ring really diminishes him a lot. There's a lot of great small forwards, though. Poor Piz definitely has, you know, he definitely has a great legacy. His legacy is going to be remembered. I'm always going to remember the whole, you know, the thing when he was sitting there talking about, when he was sitting there talking about to Al Harrington in the playoffs, and he's sitting there looking at him. And I think something went like, yo, you had my poster on your wall when you was in high school, and he's telling him, I'm about to go to this spot. He shoots it. I mean, he's with Boston. Al Harrington was with Indiana. A classic moment. Just like a classic moment in NBA history. You know what I'm saying? So, I love it. I love that moment. I love a lot of those moments. Dwayne Wade's finals appearance in 06, when he went off and just went crazy on Dallas in those last six games, they won after being down. It's just a lot, man. It's crazy, you know? Just crazy. So, just an amazing thing. But, you know, the argument, it really took off. Everybody was retweeting, saying different things. I just really hate the fact that people went at him the way they did, you know? He didn't really have to do that. And then, you know, I get it. D-Wade's wife is sticking up for him. And let me preface my comment that I'm about to say by saying, look, I'm not disrespecting her in any way possible. I would never disrespect another man's wife. But you can't sit there and be like, oh, you talking about somebody that looks like you. Like, come on. It's not that deep. It's basketball. A couple years ago when Kevin Durant said he thought James Harden should have been in the top 10 and not Dwayne Wade, Dwayne Wade put a cryptic Instagram post up and it was a dry erase board and said, let them, you know, make sure they remember your history. Or something along that line, like make sure they remember your name or whoever or your place in history. He got mad too. He got mad when basically somebody said he wasn't the best, and that's just the competitive nature. So to kind of close it out, it's not something where you got Paul Pierce is talking about, like Paul Pierce was a sixth man or a seventh man his whole career, and he didn't really score much. Paul Pierce was lethal. He was the man in Boston for a while. He had to get help. He ended up getting help. You know, I think they could have had more than one ring. Kevin Garnett got hurt the second go around. And then, you know, in 2010, they couldn't seal a deal against the Lakers. It's cool, man. They made a good run. They had a nice little run. That team had a nice little run. Dwayne Wade, you know, he had an older Shaq, but he still had Shaq. Shaq had something left in the tank. I just don't think people should diminish him as much, right? Paul Pierce should be disrespected the way he is, as if he's a bum. He's not a bum. Because of his, you want to tell the truth, historically, you know, you look at these numbers, Karl Malone isn't better than Charles Barkley. And Karl Malone's the second all-time leading scorer in NBA history. I think pound for pound, inch for inch, Barkley's probably right behind Tim Duncan. And he may be somebody's favorite power forward. 6'5 point guard. I mean, power forward to do what he did in that era in the NBA. I mean, come on, that's different. You know what I'm saying? Totally different. He was a beast physical specimen. People need to really get over it. Stop it. Stop trying to say different things. Make it out to be something that is really not. People are really getting ahead of themselves, but just crazy. I just had to address it because it was something that was addressed and something that was, you know, something that was talked about. So, you know, I'm just giving my take. Dwayne Wade had a better career, but Paul Pierce wasn't a slouch. Numbers don't always tell a story because some people won't go on the record and say it, but you have people that are older and people that were able to see it live. And let me be frank. I have the utmost respect for all these athletes to be able to do what they've done and everybody in history. But, you know, Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain is always a murky argument for some. I'm just going to go for what I saw. I didn't see him live. I don't know him. I don't know what he's like live and what he did. Amazing. Physical specimen. Can do everything. But, you know, Walt didn't really have any help like Russell had help. I think if you switch their teams, I think the Celtics may have done stuff that would never touch. I mean, yeah, they won 8 straight. Nobody will ever win 8 straight. And obviously the argument will always be if Jordan didn't retire, the Bulls could have probably tied that streak. And a lot of people think they can. I'm one that believes Robert Horry's bugging when he says that the Rockets would have beat the Bulls. They would have pushed them to 7 games, but I don't think they would have beat the Bulls. You know what I'm saying? That's just my humble opinion. But I also think that people, you know, they diminish Walt. Oh, he only got 2 rings. Like, stop saying it. That argument is always null and void. Robert Horry has 7. He's nowhere near the player Charles Barkley was. Robert Horry's nowhere near what Paul Pierce was. He was a specialist. Specialists aren't superstars. They don't have better careers. My boy at the gym, I love him to death. great guy. He's one of my homies. I love him. And I won't tell it. I won't say his name because he listens to me. But he said he thought Robert Horry had a better career than Charles Barkley because he won a championship. That doesn't diminish who you were. You can only do but so much, right? If Paul Pierce didn't have help early in his career, that's the GM's fault, not his fault. I definitely think, you know, Paul Pierce lost out on some of his best years because of, you know, him not having the proper people in the front office. But obviously they got it together towards the end and he was able to have someone there with him. So, I mean, the argument is your opinion. There's a person in the world right now that thinks Paul Pierce is the better player. There's a guy right now out in the world that thinks, you know, Dwayne Wade is better than Kobe. So we don't, you know, it's all subjective. It's what you like and who you like. That's just how it always goes. There's always gonna be a fan and they're always going to, you know, they're always gonna have some more to say. But so look, while I'm on basketball, let me stay on my basketball streak. Let me just stay here for a minute. I want to talk about last week and I want to talk about the Final Four. I got a lot to say about the Final Four on both ends for two different reasons. Look, man, it was a great Final Four. It was an amazing Final Four. Obviously, I wanted Duke to get there. I wanted to see that semifinal matchup, that Duke-Texas Tech matchup. That would have been a great rematch from the game early in the season. And, of course, that Virginia, you know, the Virginia game against Auburn was a good one as well. So, originally I had my Final Four, which kind of went kaput early. I had North Carolina, Virginia, and I had, I had Duke and Florida State, actually. I thought Florida State would get past Gonzaga. It didn't work out that way. I wanted an All-ACC Final Four. Would have been pretty awesome. It would have been the first time since I don't think that's ever happened. Remember, the Big East had three teams in the 85 Final Four. You know, they had St. John's. It was St. John's, Villanova, Georgetown. And, you know, that was pretty awesome. Pretty awesome day for the conference. So I wanted to talk about the men's Final Four. It was a great Final Four period on both sides. And let me get my thought process. Let me get my win back up. Because, you know, for me, it was great. What a redemption story. I mean, what a redemption story, Virginia. In 2018, everybody was kicking them while they were down. They're terrible. They suck. They this, they that. Listen, we get it. They were embarrassed to lose UMBC, you know, to UMBC. For, you know, everybody was like, oh, you know, I remember saying I was talking to my teacher literally like the day before. And we said, man, I wonder if we'll ever see a 16 beat a 1 seed. And he was like, nah, I don't know. It ain't happening this year. The next day, UMBC defeated them. And I remember looking at that game like, nah, they're not going to win this. You know, you're waiting for that big run by Virginia. It just never happened. They got caught. Or they were off on a day when they could not afford to be off. I mean, it was like, damn, right? So it was terrible. But let me go back and say something about that. That's not the first time a 16 has ever beat a 1, actually. So that happened in 1998. Harvard beat Stanford. So that was back on the women's bracket. That happened in 98. So people need to go back and fact check that. So it's happened. And it kind of gets diminished a lot. People always say the first time in NCAA history, like, you should put it across the board. Like, NCAA history, NCAA, they host men and women's sports. So you should really blast it out there like that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'll get to that later. But, you know, it's pretty awesome how they were able to come back. They locked in. They focused all year, you know? All year. You know, it's just crazy how they were able to do that. You know, you don't think. You think, okay, they're going to come back and they're going to have a decent year, right? They're going to come back. They're going to be okay. You figure like, no, it's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen. And so, you know, you look at everything and it's like, all right, whatever. They came back, man. They balled out. Great team all season. They lost to Duke twice. The first game was closer than the second one. The second game, Duke shot lights out. So it's like hard to defeat anybody that shoots lights out like that, right? When you go from there, you didn't lose to Florida State in the ACC tournament. Then it's like, oh, man, more the same. The Gardner-Webb game, they down by a little bit. And like, oh, God, the same thing. They got it together. And they made it happen. And you know what? They locked in. They focused. They were able to cut down the nets. Man, an amazing story overall. Listen, the players were able to overcome a lot. You know, I know Kyle Guy was going through anxiety. Just the fact that it mattered, like, what you put yourself through. I mean, you look at some of those images after after last year, and Kyle Guy is sitting there with his head in his jersey crying. It was terrible. You feel terribly bad for him because it's like, yo, like, they worked so hard all year. Like, they had a legit shot to win it last year. Like, they were good. And, you know, you watch them, they lose, and it sucks. You know, DeAndre Hunter, he was out. He had an injury, so that hurt. You know, you missing a guy like that, you know, when he's out, it's gonna be a different team. But you figured everybody else would be able to step up. They weren't. They came in this year. They locked. They loaded. Everybody got a little bit better. Kyle Guy got better. Ty Jerome got a lot better. And DeAndre Hunter got a lot better as well. Improved a hell of a lot more. And they stepped up. And they're so good, man. They're really good. Really, really good. It's great to see these guys. You know, I just say this, man. DeAndre Hunter's phenomenal. Kyle Guy is ice water in his veins for what he did in the semifinals, hitting those three free throws at the end after he was fouled. Amazing. You know, Ty Jerome is special. He's going to be fun to watch at the next level. It's impressive that all three locked in were able to bring it home. You know, they all are great. Kyle Guy talks about it after the game. He was nervous hitting those free throws. But it's like, bro, you just hit three of the biggest free throws in school history. It's crazy. Really crazy. It was just cool, man. The Final Four, like I said, was phenomenal. The Final Four is always amazing. I think this year was a little bit more of a personal touch for me because one of my buddies, he's Ty Jerome's dad. And, you know, we talk every day. We talk. And I won't share what we talk about, but we would just talk about everything, how the season progressed. And we share notes. And so whenever your friends are, when your friends have kids and your friends have a personal investment in something, you always support it, no matter what it is, whether it's a business, whether it's something, you know, whatever. You, in the social media age, and have your friends doing anything, you support them. You retweet it, you repost it, whatever. That's my friend's son. That's his son. He made him. So, hey, I'm a Virginia fan now. You know, that makes me, that's a part of it. That's you know, as my brotherhood, you know, as a part of our brotherhood, I support what he supports. You know, everybody talked about the Auburn game. Auburn came close, but you know what? It is what it is. They didn't survive. Everybody's talking about the missed call. The refs are human. They missed a lot of calls. It was a few calls where Ty got grabbed. It was a few calls during the game where other people got grabbed. So what? Who cares? You know, Texas Tech looked phenomenal. Chris Baird's a great coach. He's going to do some amazing things in Lubbock. However, I am surprised UCLA didn't reach out to him because everybody knows UCLA. They had an opening. That program's going through whatever they're going through. And I think even though he's great in Lubbock, I wonder, a guy like him, what he would be able to get and recruit to UCLA. It's crazy. You know, UCLA ended up getting Cincinnati's coach, Mick Cronin. So, you know, congrats to him as well. But it's amazing. It's crazy. But I mean, I guess it's meant for him to be at Texas Tech, and they're going to be good for years to come if he can just keep it here. But I'm going to tell him now, whatever guy in the administration, whatever young ladies in the administration, you better get that guy some money that's going to make him say no to every school. You know, you got to give him a situation that's really great. You got to keep him locked in because people going to be coming for him, man. 4 years in, he's in the final game his fourth year. I mean, Texas Tech never really been that far. I mean, the Darwin Ham led Texas Tech team in 96, you know, 95, 96, when he broke the backboard. I mean, they won 30 games that year, and they got eliminated in the Sweet 16, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, you knew a 30-somewhere Texas Tech team in the beginning of the season. You knew, like, they weren't going to really make a run. This team kind of caught everybody by surprise. Like, even though they had as many wins as they did, you didn't expect them. Many people didn't pick them, you know. Unless you're a diehard Red Raiders fan. A lot of people didn't pick him. So it was just amazing to see how that worked out. I mean, they're going to be good, though. But that coach is good. I don't know if he'll be there for long. So if any major jobs open up, he's definitely going to be one of my candidates. Just a little surprise UCLA didn't go after him. They went after Rick Barnes, who decided to ultimately stay at Tennessee because it's a better move for him and his family. And I think he's going to do some special things there as well. But I don't know. So as I'm still on this, I wanted to move over to the young ladies. They balled out as expected. Those young ladies are amazing. Amazing, right? Oregon, surprise. They got a girl, Sabrina Ionescu. I probably screwed her name up. She's amazing. She passed on the WNBA because she's of age. She could have gone to the draft, but she decided to stay put. You know, she can flat out ball. A regional final against Mississippi State, you know, last 2018's runner-up. She caught fire, lit them up for 31. You know, they ran into a stronger Baylor team in the Final Four, which was expected. Notre Dame and UConn gave us another great battle. You know, the national championship is, you know, they get, you know, let me take that back. Notre Dame and UConn gave us another great battle. You know, the year before the national semifinals, Arike Ogunbowale, she entered the season on a game-winning three. Crazy, ice water in the veins, mama mentality. She's amazing. You know, I loved it. I'm surprised to see it. You know, it's like the fourth year Geno didn't win one. So it's like all hell breaks loose whenever UConn doesn't win it. Somebody was like, oh, they're struggling. Like, bro, how are they struggling? Like, they just haven't won a national championship. Like, they're still in the Final Four. You know, they're still a competitor every year. Like, last year, it took a last-second shot. They didn't get blown out. So You know, college basketball, women's college basketball, you know, the basketball guys have to work on your side. You have to hope to avoid UConn or just be on your game completely because, you know, it's like Mississippi State when they beat them, you know, the season before that. And they lost in the last second shot. You just, what it happens. Everybody's shocked, but they win so much. And I thought I'd never lived through like a John era kind of thing, you know, John Wooden era kind of thing when UCLA winning everything. Like whenever they lost, it's like shocked, the shock factor. Like if you're a wrestling fan, you know the face everybody made when the Undertaker lost at WrestleMania. It's like, that's the face you make when UConn loses sometimes. Like, yo, what? How'd they lose? Like, you're just confused, man. So, I mean, it happens, you know what I mean? But they didn't win again. It happens. So it's good for college basketball. Everybody else gets a chance to eat. Everybody gets a chance to breathe. And then they'll come back stronger. And they'll come back better. And Gino will be back. He'll probably come back and roll off about four more straight. So he keeps loading them up. Just be prepared because UConn's coming right back. They're loaded up. I think they got the number one recruiting class in the country. Baylor and Notre Dame battled it out. Of course, it was dramatic. It was crazy. You know, Lauren Cox got hurt. You know, when she went down, everybody was like, uh-oh, you know, Rike Ogunbale. I said to myself, man, I don't know if I tweeted it out, but I said, man, she's about to go off. And she did. They got back. They tied it up. And it wasn't like her to miss the free throw. But she missed the free throw at the end of the game. That would have, you know, it was two free throws. She missed one. It would have tied them up. And Baylor ended up hanging on. Chloe Jackson's amazing. Lauren Cox is amazing. That whole team is, you know, it's crazy. Chloe Jackson, you know, she came over as a grad transfer. She's doing her thing, and it's crazy. But, you know, Kim Mulkey joins Geno and Pat Summitt as only coaches with three or more national championships. You know, Muffy McGraw has two. It's, you know, great game. But I talked about this because I wanted to say something. Like, I wish these games could be simulcast, right? These ladies should be broadcasted, I think, all throughout the country on as many channels as possible. Now, I get it. ESPN, they got them on and they schedule it the right way. But sometimes these games get lost in translation where, although they put the women's stuff up and you know that it's there, you don't know that it's there. You know, it's really hard at times. It's really, you know, they don't get blasted the way they should get blasted. I think somehow, some way, and don't listen to me, you know, don't listen to me. I really think that I wish the powers that be can somehow get together, can sit there and say, listen, we're going to simulcast this. We're going to work out an agreement between ESPN and CBS or however you want to do it. And I know I'm just talking, but something needs to be done because, yeah, Carol Lawson and them are good. But I think a lot of us would love to see what it was like to hear Grant Hill, Jim Nance, and Bill Raftery comment, you know, talk about those games. This just my personal opinion, but I really think it would be awesome. I really think it would be amazing. That's just my humble opinion. I really think it'll be great, and I really think it'll be something that, you know, we could all enjoy. It's just, that's just what I think. I think because hearing Charles Barkley talk about these young ladies at halftime would be so amazing. I mean, it would be really, really amazing. And I don't know what can be done to make it work or what can be done to have that happen. But the powers that be need to come together and really need to do something different. I think these ladies need to be put on blast more. I don't know why. And I've always felt like this. But, you know, college basketball, women's college basketball as a whole, it's always good, you know, because you get to blast off to other kids that are coming up. You get to see them. You know, they get a chance to see different places. Like, how many, you know, every kid isn't going to go to UConn. Every kid isn't going to go to South Carolina. Every kid isn't going to go to Tennessee. Every kid isn't going to go to Notre Dame, et cetera, et cetera. We need to put them on a platform where everybody's looking at other stuff and everybody else is looking at, you know, everybody knows their names because these guys, these kids come out of school and everybody's talking about, oh, yeah, Zion's getting $100 million contract. But what about the... what about the girls? What about Arike Ogunbowale? You know, is she getting a shoe deal? You know, are they getting shoe deals? Like, and I'm not sitting here raining on nobody's parade, but it's just a simple thing. You know, for me, like, I think they all should really get the same. They should all get the same amount of love. You know, like, it's plenty of girls out here that we don't know about. Megan Gustafson, she plays at Iowa. She scored 1,000 points in the season. I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers the last time a guy scored 1,000 points in the season, but to my memory, it was Glenn Robinson when he played with Purdue 93-94, his sophomore year. He scored 1,000 points in the season. Why don't we know more about this? It's kind of like a footnote. It's something that's put up on Instagram and Twitter, and it's kind of like, well, we're going to leave it here, and hopefully you guys come on and catch it. So I really wish the powers that be can sit there and do something with CBS or whoever it is, and they could kind of say, hey, we need to get these girls out there. We need to put this up there. We need to show them some love because you know what? They're awesome. They're amazing. And looking at these ladies, you know, seeing Arike Ogunbowale, you know, seeing her, and seeing her do what she did this year and looking at her and her teammates, you know, like Notre Dame just had five girls going in the WNBA draft. Like Jackie Young left school early. Notre Dame's guard. I mean, she's 6 foot. She's 6 feet. She can do everything. You know, she's so diverse and she knows everything well-rounded. Like everybody doesn't know these girls' names, like Asia Durr, Tara McCown from Mississippi State, Katie Lou Samuelson from UConn, aforementioned Megan Gustafson. People don't know their names. They all just went in WNBA draft. So we need to understand who these ladies are. We need to get them some more publicity. The men's Final Four was great. It's always great. The ladies' Final Four is awesome as well. Trust me, I've been watching them since I was a kid. You know, my fondest memory is UConn's first national championship where Rebecca Lobo had the big hair and her, Kara Walters, and her the rest of the crew. I believe Nakisha Sales was on that team, and they won their first championship. They went 35-0. It was an amazing thing to see. So I think these ladies need to get more love and more publicity, and they need to make that happen. But let me take a quick break right quick. I've been going on about this basketball stuff. I got some more stuff to talk about. I want to talk some NFL stuff. And we're going to dive into that in a little bit more. So we can take this quick break, and I'll be right back with you guys. What's good, y'all? Welcome back. I want to keep this ball rolling, man, and I want to talk about this whole Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster thing. Don't really have a lot on it. I mean, we all know what it is. I'm really going to keep harping on it. If you don't know, Antonio Brown and Juju Smith were going back and forth on Twitter, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Juju kind of was showing more support for the organization, and Ben Roethlisberger's AB's gone. And I guess he figured, like, hey, you know, he being Antonio Brown figured, hey, you know, you're my guy. Like, you're supposed to stick up for me. But Juju, like, I'm sticking up for Big Ben. I'm doing whatever. I'm not going to get into specifics as far as everything else. I seen it back and forth, the war of words. And then Antonio Brown did something that was kind of, like, petty as hell, low class. And he's like, he shares a DM, right? And this is what makes it difficult why people are kind of reluctant to send anything via text, social media, whatever. And, you know, Juju's message was, what's up, AB? I'm a receiver at USC. I appreciate all your work. You're a great man and on and off the field. Do you have any tips that can help me take my game to the next level? Thanks, man. Now, I think on our way up, we being everybody, nobody makes it by themselves unless, you know, somehow, some way you hit the lottery at a young age, you're able to do whatever the hell you want to do. But ideally, we all need a hand at some point in time in our lives, and whether it's somebody putting us in the right position with the right people, somebody here on the south or whatever it is, we just need help sometimes. And I think what he did here was very classless. I mean, you know, I don't know Antonio Brown, obvious, for the obvious reason. And if I ever sat down and talked to him, I kind of want to know, what's the point of getting there? What are you doing there? What's the point of that? I think that's, you're trying to embarrass somebody I looked up to. That's like me. That's like sitting there, me getting in the war words with Stephen A. Smith or you know, Shannon Sharp, Skip Bayless, Rob Parker, Chris Broussard. You know, you get my drift. And that's like them sharing something with me. And it's just like, bro, like I was trying to get put on. I'm trying to make a way for myself. I'm trying to sit there and say, hey, listen to my podcast. If you get a chance, let me know what you think. What can I work on? That's like, you know, a production. That's like somebody at ESPN or Fox Sports, like one of the producers for one of these radio shows. That's like them hearing my stuff and, you know, me going, hey, could you take a listen? I just want you to hear what I sound like. Let me know what I could work on. And them sharing a DM of me sending a message after I signed with another network, or we had a disagreement. I think it's ridiculous. I think a lot of times these athletes, and I'm one where I don't think it's that serious. I mean, I don't care how much money you make. I mean, I think you should always be who you are. But I guess, like they say, man, when you get that money, money just kind of shows who you've always been. And if you were a jerk with no money, you're gonna be a quiet jerk. But when you get that money, you're gonna be a loud jerk. And in this case, it seems like he's being a loud jerk. I don't get what he was doing. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. Like, you're that petty. Like, you took it to that level. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what was your point? You're trying to embarrass somebody who's looking for help? And like, he said, yo, could you let me borrow some money? That's a little different. Like, you know, that's kind of like the world we're in now. Everybody wants to kind of have one up on somebody, so they're going to embarrass you as much as possible. Oh, you came to me looking for money. No, I didn't. Well, yes, you did. I got it written down. It's like, all right, bro, whatever you feel like saying, go ahead and say it. If it makes you sleep better at night, knowing that, hey, you want to tell people I asked you for money, then, hey, be my guest. You know, some people are just like that. Some people are naturally petty and some people are naturally terrible. And I think, you know, this guy, he's kind of showing his true colors. And it's like, why? Like, what are you doing? If a guy looks up to you and a guy idolizes you, he obviously reached out for a reason. You know, for me, for doing what I want to do. I'm sure everybody knows I'm not just podcasting because I think it's cool. I'm podcasting because I'm like, hey, you know, I want to do something with this. I want to have an opportunity one day. And they always tell you, make a way when there's no way, right? Make a way for yourself. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to get to the point where, you know, I can just make the right connections and do the right thing. So it's going to require me to put myself out there a little bit more than I want to be. You know, it's a little uncomfortable for me. I'll admit, I don't like reaching out to people that I don't know because it gives you the chance of getting rejected really bad. You know what I'm saying? But here's a guy, you know, he needed help. He wanted some tips. I mean, probably could have reached out to anybody else, but he reached out to him. He's doing what he has to do. I mean, guy had 111 receptions this year, Juju. That's what I'm referring to. He did his part, and it's just like, bro, you're trying to play him? Like, why? I don't really get that. I never really got that. Some guys like that really, I don't know. Maybe it's just different. Maybe I'm a little different in a sense where I think you don't really have to do that. It's really a little petty to take that stance. As far as, you know, especially with a young guy trying to really get himself situated and do what he has to do. So it is what it is, man. I think that was a little tacky on his part. But, you know, good luck in Oakland. I know a lot of people are saying, like, Oakland's in for it. I know Jack Del Rio said the same thing, like, they're in for it. You know, good luck with them. And I saw, you know, Ryan Clark said something on ESPN 2 the other day, and he was just like, he was going on, because Ryan Clark's been very quiet as far as things with Antonio Brown. They had their little beef or whatever the case may be, and he just kind of kept it, you know, he kind of kept it under wraps. But ideally, you know, sometimes he speaks up, he says certain things, and this one of the times he felt like speaking up. And when he spoke up, it was just kind of like, you know, this is what it is. You know, people knew what it was. People expected this. People know what kind of guy he is. And it seems like, Doug, it's petty jealousy. If I'm getting all this money and you take a commercial from me, you think I'm going to cry, bro? I could care less about a commercial if I'm making $20 million a year. Bro, get all the attention you want. I won't make this $20 million in private. You know, but some people are different, man. So it's whatever, man. But I said, man, Juju, do your thing. Antonio Brown, do whatever you do, man. I just think it's petty. They got to that point, man. Get off of Twitter. You know, maybe one day he'll look at himself and say, damn, I was a little tacky with what I did. You know, because sometimes I think a lot of these athletes act out in the fact of thinking they're going to be 25, 26 forever. Like, sometimes the ball stops bouncing. Sometimes you can't run the route the same way. You know, Shannon Sharp would tell you in a heartbeat, yeah, well, hell, you know, I look like I could still play football, but I know I can't play football, you know? And, you know, I guess, you know, looking at it too, Antonio Brown, I guess he tried to do damage control by deleting the tweet. I guess he caught himself, but it's like, bro, you put it out there, people know. A little petty, a little ridiculous, actually, if you ask me, but it is what it is. That's who he is. He's never going to change. People understand that and accept it. You know, people have accepted it and dealt with it forever. Oakland's got a lot on their hands, man, so good luck, man. I wouldn't want that headache. I don't envy them at all. I really don't envy them at all, so that's just... it's one of those things, man. NFL draft is in about 2 weeks. I still see that Kyler Murray's number one pick, the top choice. I know he was there, and I see another draft, mock draft, and they said Nick Bosa from Ohio State was actually maybe the number one pick as well. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll see what's going on with that and what's coming to life with everything else with that. So, I mean, it's really been quiet as far as everything else in the NFL front. You know, everybody else is just trying to gear up for this draft. And college football is about 134 days away as well. So looking forward to that. You know, some more, you know, NFL news. Recently, Sterling Shepard, he's just secured a nice little deal with the Giants, a $41 million extension, 21 guaranteed. So, you know, we'll see. You know, things are happening. I'm not necessarily the biggest, you know, New York Giants fan, but, you know, it's a necessity that you got to talk about these things, obviously. And that's what I'm here to do, and spread the news and give you everything. So, Let me take another quick break right now while I have the time. I'll come back and get into some more. Oh, before I forget, it's also Masters Week. The Masters actually starts today. As I'm recording, it's April 11th. You know, the field is open this year. You know, it was no real clear-cut favorite. Tiger's always an option. He's always an option. You know, you always have that. You know, you always go with him. You know, you always go with him because just of who he is. He's the man. You know, you got a lot, though. I mean, you got Justin Rose. You know, he's there. You know, Tony Finau, Francisco Molinari. You know, you got Dustin Johnson. You got a few guys out there that can possibly win it. You know, Rory is another one. He's been, like, the overwhelming favorite. I've been seeing his name a lot. Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler. You know, it's just Masters Week. You know, we also see Brooks Koepka. Oh, God, I'm tearing his name. I'm terrible at names, man. But haven't really seen a lot of people, like, talking about Tiger. Maybe this motivates him and puts him up there. You know, even talking about golf. It's never been my strong suit or my strong point, but I will say, for a sport that's not normally the norm, for let's call it what it is, a lot of guys that live in urban neighborhoods don't really play golf or even thought about golf until they heard of Tiger Woods. And I'm one of those guys. But I will say that, you know, playing a game and learning it when I was in high school was always intriguing, was always interesting. And kind of looking at it, it was always exciting. Going back on some of my master's memories, 97 always stands out. Because Tiger Woods, I mean, if you love sports, right? If you love sports, you kind of understand, like, you really just want to see history being made. Me, especially me. If I'm not, like, even if, you know, I don't watch a sport, you know, I want to see history being made. Like, if it's something that's good that you have to tune into, you want to watch. You know, you kind of really want to watch. And, you know, for me, another guy that I love watching and love seeing through the years is Phil Mickelson. Of course, his first Masters win in 04 after years of struggling and barely getting by. I mean, and barely, you know, missing out on these majors and things like that. So it should be interesting to see what happens. So this is, you know, the Masters starts now. We got a couple days. You know, we got the next 4 days. It'll be all about the Masters. So we see who starts fast. We'll see what's what. You know, maybe Tiger can finish it. Maybe he can have one of those runs like Jack Nicklaus had, you know. Jack Nicklaus, because I get that name screwed up sometimes. But, you know, maybe that's something that we can see. We can kind of see him make another run. You know, Jack Nicklaus had a run in his 40s. You know, he had that memorable victory. I think it was 44, 45, maybe. I may be wrong. Just fact check if you need to. But that'd be good to see that happen, man. So it's Masters Week. Don't forget, tune in. Should definitely be good to watch and everything else. So let me go ahead again, man. I got to take a quick break. I'll be right back with you guys some more. Just take a quick one. I'll be right back. Welcome back, y'all. Got a few things to dig into before we get up out of here. Want to discuss the WNBA draft. It was last night, actually. It's after midnight as I'm recording this. So, you know, the WNBA, they draft 36 players and they have 3 rounds. It's a little bit different than the NBA draft. Obviously, NBA draft is about 30 picks in the first round and 30 picks in the second round. So it's a little bit different for obvious reasons because it's structured more, there's more teams and so forth. But you know, it was a few names that went out. You know, 5 Notre Dame players, they got drafted tonight. That was pretty awesome. You know, Jackie Young went number 1 from Notre Dame. Asia Durr from Louisville. Tara McCown from Mississippi State. Katie Lou Samuelson from UConn. Arike from Notre Dame. Afisa Kalia from UConn. She went number 6. You know, Kalani Brown, Alana Smith, you know, Christine Angui, Kara Leslie, Brianna Turner. I mean, there's a lot of great players that were drafted. So it's something to look out for. These young ladies of the future, pretty good, you know, pretty good draft class. So should be on the lookout for them. This season gets started in about 44 days. So, I mean, that's why if you're wondering why it's been so close, but I always say, why is it so close right after the season? But it's going to be an interesting season in WNBA. A lot of talent coming over. Zion Williamson swept all the College Player of the Year awards. He's got every one. I mean, nobody expected less. I mean, he was the most outstanding player in the nation by far. I know John Morant was, you know, coming onto the scene. I know he got like a few votes in one of the, you know, for one of the organizations. I don't know if it was the Naismith or whatever, but you know, Zion Williamson kind of took the college world by storm. We knew he was going to be good, but this good was crazy. And speaking of Zion Williamson, the bidding war is about to be insane. I've been hearing numbers up to 100, 110 million for some stuff, you know, for a sneaker deal with him. And this is not out of the norm because we saw it with LeBron. But yeah, man, Zion's about to do some crazy things, and that's going to be crazy. But, you know, we're gonna expect him to declare pretty soon. I know he's taking his time, but we can't expect anything less. So, you know, John, speaking of declaring, John Morant declared. RJ Barrett declared for the draft yesterday. So it's everybody's out. There's no point in staying in school, man. It's what's the point? You come to school, you know, you win, you don't win, but you go to college to get a job, right? That's exactly what these kids are doing. So pretty cool. And the NBA playoffs are set. I know right now a lot of these games or a lot of these teams are playing this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but it's about to go down. I know I look at all these things and you know, I've looked at the standings and how everything is lined up. So everything starts on Saturday. So it should be interesting. And, you know, who's going to dethrone the Warriors? We don't know. But I know I'm looking at it right now. I'm going to start with the East. I see the Pistons. They got the Pistons got a Milwaukee. That may not be good for them. You know, Boston's got Indiana. But, you know, Marcus Smart is out. He's got, you know, got an oblique injury. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Heart and soul of the team. He's really good. They're going to really miss him more than people think they are. 76 is against the Nets. You know, if Embiid is in the, up for the playoff open, or if he's kind of hurt, you know, don't be surprised if the Nets can sneak one in. Toronto and Orlando. You know, you got Denver and San Antonio. You got Portland, who snuck up to the third spot. They're sitting there. They're going to face OKC, who's in the sixth slot. Then you got an interesting situation at the top. You got Golden State, who's going to play the Clippers, who we expect Golden State to win. Then you got Houston and you got Utah. And if Houston goes over, they're considered the biggest threat to the Warriors for some odd reason. But I'm going to tell everybody now, man, I just think it's destiny. It may be similar to what the Bulls did in 98. It may be a little bit of a struggle. You know, that year was like a struggle for them all year, like mentally and physically. They've been winning so much, and the Warriors going for their fourth championship in 5 years. It may be a bit of a struggle, but I think they're going to get through. And if they can get through Houston, which is considered like the one roadblock, because we see what happens when they want to play, nobody can beat them. You see what they did to Denver. They teased Denver. They abused Denver. So it should be interesting. I just got the playoff schedule in front of me, which is why I'm going over it now. So I'm just going to be, you know, don't be surprised if they sit there and they run through, if they run through everybody in the playoffs again. You know, I think it's the last dance. I think everybody knows what's at stake. The team, as we know it, may not be back again. It's a bunch of different things that could happen. You know, KD could stay. He could leave. You know, Steph is signed up. He's there. Clay may get his money back. Draymond, you know, you start to hear he's a little upset about things. So we'll see how that goes. We'll definitely see how that goes, but we'll go from there. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens, man. It's definitely going to be interesting. And, of course, you know, baseball is back. But let's not sit there and get too carried away. Baseball is nothing crazy going on with baseball right now. It's the first couple of days. You know, people don't need to get all worked up about baseball. Like right now, as you look at the standings right now, if you say, oh, who's the best team right now in baseball? You'd say the Tampa Bay Rays are, right? But it's 13 games in. That never really says much. You know, the Yankees get hot. They could win 15 in a row. You know, right now, the teams that are the division lead in the American League, you got Tampa Bay, you got Detroit, and then you got Seattle. Actually, Seattle looks really good. So they're 12-2. So, you know, we may be on to something with them. You got the NL East. You know, it's a three-way tie for first between the Mets, the Braves, and the Phillies. Then you got the NL Central. Milwaukee's in first. And, of course, NL West, you got the Dodgers. So nothing to get too excited about with baseball. That's really it. You can't really determine that with baseball until like right before the All-Star break, or you get to see what kind of momentum is, you know, what the momentum is looking like and what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Mike Trout, you know, you go individually, everybody's going to be looking at him. He's got that big deal. You know, the season ended today. He'd be the first 400 hitter since Ted Williams, right? He's at 406 right now, leading the team in almost every statistical category right now. You know, hitting 406, 5 home runs, 12 RBIs, 592 on base percentage, and 13 hits. So, but it's early right now. He's amazing. We know what he brings to the table. Albert Pujols, he's struggling right now. So he's not the Albert Pujols we once knew and loved. He's sitting 214 right now. But again, he has a chance to turn things around. With that being said, that's all I have for today. I'll be back soon. Maybe back this weekend. But I don't know when I'll be back, but I'll be back really soon because the playoffs are here. There's a lot of things going on. There's going to be a lot of things to report, a lot of things to talk about. Again, if you aren't following me on social media, please do so. At Jay Bolton Show on Instagram and Twitter. Sorry, God, my tongue is tied. At Jay Bolton Show on Instagram and Twitter. So please do so. Follow me. Holler at me. Let me know what's up. If I'm doing anything good, anything bad, please. I'm open to all criticism. You know, I like when people tell me things and help me get better and improve. So I'm here for it. You know, holler at me, man, at Jay Bolton Show. If you want to join me for an episode, please let me know. We can make that happen. We can work it in and we'll go from there. So that's all I have for you. Like I said, I'll be back soon. We'll talk. Holler at me if you need me, and I'm out.